Yisrael Sharim, in his discussion of Midas Hanikius in the 11th parak, continues from Hadrega Hashlishis Achra Hagezel V'Arayas V'Inin Hachemda Hinehu Issa V'Hamachalos. The third level, after discussing not being careful of other people's money and discussing issues of immorality, is the issue of foods that we may not eat. Baby inyan ha-trefas asmam, whether it's referring to things that are actually forbidden, trefos, baby inyan ta-usayim, or maybe a combination of something not kosher with something kosher. Baby inyan bas b'cholav, or if they're both kosher, one's meat, one's milk. O chele v'dam, or if it's forbidden fats or bloods, inyan b'shili goyim, or food cooked by a non-Jew, inyan ge'uli goyim, or pots that had been used by non-Jews. Yeinischam b'stam yeinam, or wine that they poured from the zara, or wine that they touched. Kol elu hanekiyas v'nsarach dikta gadol v'tzarach chizuk. In all of these areas of kashrus, it requires tremendous oversight, being very particular, and you have to be stark, you have to strengthen yourself. Kish tayvas halev v'mesal machal matayvim. There's a tremendous drive for foods that are good, certainly issues of financial loss, if something forbidden got mixed in and then you're going to have to throw it away. So you have this combination of forces, one, that you want to eat good food, and number two, you don't want to throw out food that would have been okay. There's a numerous details, like all the various laws that are well known and clarified in the books of the Poskim. If someone is lenient when you're supposed to be strict, he's basically destroying his soul. We say in the Brisa, don't defile yourselves in them and make yourselves tame. If you ignore the halachas and make yourselves impure through them, then you will become impure. Hainu. Forbidden food actually brings tumah into a person's heart and soul. Until the holiness of Hashem will abandon him and distance from him. It dulls the person. The sins will dull the heart of the person or close up the heart of the person. By eating forbidden foods, it takes away the true knowledge and seichel that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives to those that are pious. Like it says in Pasuk, Hashem is the one who gives chachma. If he eats things that he's not supposed to, he'll remain very physical and animalistic, steeped in the physicalness of this world. In this way, foods that are forbidden are actually worse than other things that you're not allowed to do. Because you literally internalize them. V'nasim b'asim b'sor becomes like his flesh. So the Ramchal is explaining to us the severity of ma'acholos asuris, the severity of things that are forbidden, are because when a person eats things that are forbidden, it affects him in a much stronger way than doing other averos. And the fact that he internalizes these things, it creates a barrier from Kedusha, where Kedusha he has leaves him, and it's much more difficult for him to overcome this tumah that he brings upon himself by eating the things he's not supposed to eat. The concept of kashrus and the concept of things that are forbidden has to do with the ruchnius that Kadosh Baruch Hu puts into everything in the world. And there's certain levels of kedusha, even in the inanimate plant life has kedusha, and animal life has kedusha, and everything has certain sparks of kedusha, if you will, certain levels of kedusha. the foods that the Torah allows us to eat are such that when we eat them, it gives nourishment to our body, and the holiness of the food sustains our ruchnius. So it's twofold. And this is what Arizal says on the pasuk, Lo alechem avado yichye adam, man does not live on bread alone, referring to there's ruchnius in it. It's not just the physicalness. Man is a hybrid of guf and neshama, and the food has a combination of kedusha and physicalness, chumius. So the foods that we eat give nourishment to our physical body on the physical level, but there's also a kedusha that our neshama can absorb from the kosher foods. And that's the concept of the foods that we're allowed to eat. It's very easily absorbable to take in the kedusha of plants, of fruits. And that's why they're all kosher. There isn't a thing that grows from the ground or on a tree that isn't kosher. The exception, you might say, is arla. The first 3 years, you're not supposed to eat the fruit of the tree. But after that, you can eat it. It's a temporary hold until it develops more. In Eretz Yisrael, you have a Trumas and Maisers thing. That's true. But outside of that, in Chutz La'aretz, anything that grows is kosher, which means the kedusha in the plants are very easily absorbed by the neshama. Fish are also easily absorbed, so to speak, in the kedusha sense, but there are kosher fish and not kosher fish. There are fish that aren't kosher, the ones without scales we don't eat, the ones with scales we do. But once you have a fish with scales, there's no halacha of shechita, there's no halacha of draining out the blood, there's no chelev, no git hanasha. The whole fish is mutter. Just kill it and eat it. Which means it's also on a high spiritual level that's easily for us to access the kedusha in fish. And that's why we do make a big deal about fish. The Shabbos and Yom Tov, fish is a special madriga. The next level is poultry, which there's a discussion in the Gemara if the requirement of shechita on birds is the same as it is on animals, and how much the shechita has to be done. And we know there is no chelev in birds, and there's no git hanasha in birds. We do shechita, and we do get rid of the blood, but there's no other issues. And again, not all birds are kosher, but most birds are kosher. The majority of birds are kosher. It only lists non-kosher birds, 24 species of non-kosher birds. Everything else is kosher. The reason we have a limited diet of birds is because we're not sure which are the kosher birds and which aren't. But from a purely scientific or statistical analysis, there are hundreds of kosher species of birds, while there's only 24 not kosher. Because again, it's easier to absorb the kedusha of birds. When it comes to actual mammals, it's very few. There's only 10 species of mammals that are kosher. And then you have to shechtet, and you have to get rid of the blood, and get rid of the chelev, and get rid of the gironosha, all these requirements before we would be able to eat it. So on that level, it's harder to access the kedusha, but it's still possible. But when you deal with the animals that aren't kosher, the mammals that are not kosher, and the birds that aren't kosher, and the fish that aren't kosher, what the Torah is telling us is, there is kedusha there, but you can't get it. You can't access that kedusha. And because you can't access it, don't eat it, because you're not going to get the kedusha out of it. And all you're going to get is bad effects, because you can't get kedusha out of those foods. And some want to say that's why we call forbidden foods asur. Because the word asur also means to tie something up, to bind it. Matir asur, we say the bracha in the morning. Things that are bound and tied are asur or asurim. The kedusha in these forbidden things are bound up and tied up. You can't pull it out. You can't access it. That's why we don't eat them. As opposed to the ones that are mutarim, like matiras, to untie, the things that are permitted, you can access that kedusha. It is, so to speak, untied. So the foods that we are allowed to eat, we can not only nourish our bodies, but we can also give sustenance to our neshama. The things that are forbidden will not help our neshama at all and will be harmful. and we're going to lose the kedusha that we naturally have by eating things that we're not supposed to eat and drinking things we're not supposed to drink. The Ramchal continues. And to make sure we understand, that's not just the animals that are forbidden or the insects that are forbidden that are problematic. But even a trefa of a kosher species is forbidden if the animal has an internal illness that renders it unfit. It also is included in this tumah. Amar Kasa, the pasuk is lahavdil bein hatamei ubein hatahar, to differentiate between the tamei and the tahar. With this week's parsha, Uboha Rabbis Perish Rabbis Seinu Zal Achacham explain, Ein Sir Chloim bin Chamor leParo. We don't have to say between a donkey and a cow. We know the difference there. Lamanem bein hatamei ubein hatahar. What's tamei and tahar? Bein hatamei lecha ubein hatahar lecha. It means if it's permitted to you or not permitted to you. Was this shechita done properly through the majority of the trachea or only partially? What's the difference between the majority and halfway? Melohasar could be a hair's breadth. Ad kashra, that's the language of Chazal. That means the difference of kashra and not kashra is very minute. If you did a proper shechita, you cut far enough, now you can eat the animal. If you didn't cut far enough, you can't eat the animal. They say at the end of the statement, this shows you the power of mitzvahs. That literally it's the width of a hair that will determine if it's kasher or not, if it's tamei or tahor. Anyone with a brain in his head should think about forbidden food the way he thinks about poison. Or a food that had something poison mixed in, tainted. If that would happen, would a person be leading to eat it? If he had the slightest suspicion, even the smallest of suspicions, certainly he would not be lenient. And if he would be lenient, would say he's a total idiot. So when it comes to foods, it's absolute poison to the soul and the heart. So which Baal Seichel is going to be lenient when it comes to a question of kashrus? And this, the pasuk says, you'll put a knife to your throat if you're a Baal Nefesh, which means to say that you're not going to eat it. So the Ramchal concludes by saying very simple. When it comes to health issues, we are smart enough to understand that you don't take chances. And if there's going to be a recall because there is a potential salmonella outbreak or E. coli or any of these other diseases, and they say, don't eat this product, you don't eat the product. And you'll bring it back to the store and get a refund, or if you don't, you'll throw it away, but you're not going to eat it. If people got sick in other states and they're putting out this sign, don't touch it, so you don't eat it. You don't say, yeah, it's not mine. It's just the other guy's. It's not going to happen to me. What are you out of your mind? What would you do? Put yourself in the sakana. You know, the chashash of sakana to get terribly sick from these diseases, from these things. So you're not going to do that. So if we have the brains and the seichel to understand that if there's a question of food safety, that we're going to be careful, then certainly when it comes to kashrus, we should have the same attitude that we're not taking any chances. If something isn't 100% acceptable, why are we going to risk ingesting, eating, or drinking something which may not be 100% acceptable? It's a very powerful mashal that he gives to compare the issues of kashrus to the issues of poison. And the problem is that we don't look at it like that. If something is a question of safety, food safety, so generally we're pretty careful. Some people aren't that careful. They should be more careful, perhaps. But we understand that the risk is not worth the benefit. And it's because you see the result. If someone gets sick, they'll be very ill from this. And they're not going to want to miss work or school or life in general, and some end up in the hospital, and some people could die. So we throw it out. That's it. And some people are worried about baltashkes. How can I throw out good food? So A, it's not good food. And B, there's a thing called baltashkes of the guf. Just like there's baltashkes on food, there's baltashkes on the human being. And you have no right to harm yourself for the sake of not wasting food. So you can throw it out. When it comes to things that are also, first of all, we don't see the impact, at least not that quickly. We are learning that if a person eats something not kosher, it affects his nesham, it affects his leiv, but it's not something that is visible. He gets sick in bed and throws up. You don't see that reaction. That's number one. Number two, very often, it's not for sure not okay. It might not be okay, but maybe it is okay. We're just not positive. So it's not like you know you're taking something which is harmful, because maybe it's okay. And then you start adding things like, this person will be insulted if I don't eat it, and this covered habrios, this person gives this to me to eat, how can I not eat it? And people get themselves into all kinds of situations. They go to someone's house, and they're offered something to eat, and they're not quite positive if this has a proper hechsher. They're not quite positive if the household is that careful with bishul akum, if they have goyim who come and help in the house. There could be many situations where you have doubts. You have doubts. And if you had doubts about food safety or allergy, you would say, I'm sorry, I have an allergy. I can't eat that stuff. It's going to be deadly for me. But if it's a kosher issue, everyone gets defensive. You don't eat my food. You don't eat my things. Most shuls have a policy that if you're going to make a kiddush in shul, nothing can be homemade. Everything has to be under hashgacha, from a caterer, prepackaged, maybe made in the shul, and the rabbi or rebbitzin are there, or special shul members in charge of the kitchen are there. But no such thing as bring cake from home. You make it simple, you cannot bring cake from home. Some places don't have such a policy. The standard is to have such a policy, some don't. And then they have someone who davens there who wants to bring stuff from home, and people don't want to eat the stuff that these people bring. So now what do you do? That person you let, and this person you let, and this person you let, and now me you don't let? I know one congregation that adopted this policy like mid-year. Years ago. They used to let anyone bring their own food in. Then they stopped. And someone was preparing a simcha for their kid and had all this stuff baked. Because until now, you're allowed to bring this stuff in. And then they said, you can't bring it in. So they announced the kiddush will be in the house. If you go to kiddush someone's house, in the house, you can do what you want. If someone makes a kiddush in their house, they can do whatever food they want. You don't want to eat in someone else's house, don't eat in their house. But they can do what they want in their own house. But the shul, I would say it's a posh, reasonable and sensible thing, should have a policy, you cannot bring homemade things, because not everyone is careful with the same things in the shul, and you want to be able to say without any hesitation or qualms that this is 100% okay, it's under hashgacha, and it's fine. And if someone makes a kiddush in their house, then you'll have to think twice, do I eat in this house, do I eat in the house? And even if you do eat in the house, it does mean everything in that house is theirs. When people make a simcha in their house, usually people send things over. So you're not necessarily eating the things that the host or hostess made. Actually, also, you probably eat things they didn't make. Or a mix of stuff they did and didn't, depending on how much time you had. If it's a ufruf, maybe more of it was made by home. If it's a vort, and they just got engaged, it could be it wasn't just made by them, right? So that's the decision you have to make. Will I or won't I eat in the house? Really, I would think it's the host and hostess that have to be more agreeable to people who won't eat in their house. people get very defensive and offended. You won't eat? Why won't you eat? They should be that way. If you want to eat, you don't want to eat, also because of the hate. I understand. You don't want to eat without hashgacha, that's fine. I have no hashgacha in my house. If you don't want to eat in my house, that's fine. Very few people are like that. But if everyone had this attitude that kashrus is like poison, and there's no FDA control, you know, so to speak, so they don't want to eat in my house. So they don't want to eat in my house. It for some people, it gets very sensitive to them, and they can be very offended. I've been to simchas where people were very offended when other people did not eat their food. And, you know, I don't know what to say. I don't fault anyone for not eating someone else's if they don't want to eat it. I don't fault them if they trust them. For the halacha, if someone's an Eir L'Chayid and they prepare food and they tell you it's kosher, the din is Eir Echadnam Bisurim, you can trust them. If an Eir L'Chayid tells you this food is kosher, you got to believe them. A woman, man, makes no difference. You got to trust someone who's Eir L'Chayid. Someone who doesn't keep kosher doesn't have any namonis. Someone does not keep kosher and comes to you and says, oh, I made this with kosher ingredients. You can't eat that. They don't keep kosher. And if they say, I stopped at Zeman's or a bake station and got this for you, that's a big problem. Do you know it was from Zeman's or a bake station? If you do, you can eat it. If you don't know, you can't eat it. Even if they say it was. Because they could have stopped in Gold's Bakery or some other place that doesn't have hashgacha and say, oh, yeah, I stopped at the place with hashgacha. But you have no way of knowing that. So usually, when you're in an office setting or the like and food has to be brought in, it's the from worker who should say, I volunteer to pick up the food. Because then you know where the food came from. But if someone who doesn't keep kosher comes and says, this is kosher, you can't trust them. They may be offended. If they're offended if I eat poison, I can't eat poison anyway. I'm not going to take poison because it makes them offended. We don't say Kavod HaBrios tells me to do things that I'm not allowed to do. When it comes to machalos asuros, you can't eat something which is forbidden just because they may be insulted if you don't choose to eat the thing that they bought or prepared for you. So again, I know it's a challenge on that level, but part of the challenge is because we don't visualize the damage of eating not kosher, what it means to eat not kosher, and how it affects us. We don't see it. It's not something we can see with our own eyes, the damage that is done. So it's a Yerushalayim, what it boils down to. It's what it boils down to. It's clearly how much Yerushalayim you have, how careful you're going to be. And I'm not advocating you shouldn't eat in other people's houses. It's perfectly fine to eat in people's houses. If they are Erlich and keep a level of kashrus that's in tune with your level of kashrus, that's fine. There are people who have stringencies with kashrus. There are people who are careful with Chol Yisrael. There are people who are careful with Pas Yisrael. There are people who are careful with Yashan. All different kinds of things. And not everyone is careful with Chol Yisrael, not everyone is careful with Pas, not everyone is careful with Yashan. But there are people who are. So if you're going to eat someplace, you're going to have to make sure, is it Yashan? Is it Chol Yisrael? Is it Pas? Whatever your particular requirements are. I believe that it is incumbent upon the guest to inform the host in advance, I have these concerns or requirements. No different than if you had an allergy or a child with an allergy and you invite someone's house, it is the guest's responsibility to please know my child can't have sesame, my child can't have milk, whatever it is. Because if you don't, then you show up and then all of a sudden, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you. What are they supposed to do now? They prepared the meal. You didn't tell them anything. And it could be all the food is contaminated. If it's sesame, maybe it's sesame on the challahs. It could be on and on and on like that. So you really have to inform the host before you come. That's so nice you invite us. I want you to know we have these allergy issues in the family or health concerns or whatever, right? If someone is gluten-free, you got to let them know. So you let them know in advance. The same should be true with kashrus things. You should be able to say, we're careful with Chol Yisrael, we're careful with Pasul, careful with whatever you're careful with. And the hostess may say, that's no problem. And they say, on second thought. You know, maybe you can't accommodate. Maybe you can't accommodate them. So that's something that, but it shouldn't be like a surprise. You show up at the house and don't eat anything because it doesn't meet any of your conditions. That's not fair. You have to make it up front, let them know in advance that these are the things that are concerns. So sometimes they'll call to invite and just say, you know, it's so nice of you to invite, I really appreciate it, but you really don't want me for a guest. I'm a very difficult guest. And they'll say, no, you tell them. And then you can say, well, this is what we're careful with. So if you're careful with those things, they'll either say, you're right, you're a difficult guest, and we can't have you, or they'll say, we do the same thing, whatever it is. So these are options that you have. But it really should be upfront, and it's not something that people should be offended by. With Pesach, it's magnified that much more. You have the Sfaradim who eat kidneys and the Ashkenazim who don't. And then you have the Ashkenazim, you have those who eat kanaos and those who don't eat kanaos. You have the Gebrux people, not Gebrux people. And then you have the people who don't eat necessarily Shmur Matzah, people who do eat Shmur Matzah, people who will eat hand matzah, people will not touch hand matzah. So you have all these other things going on. Besides, there are people who won't buy any food from a store that was made, only ingredients. They make their own mayonnaise. They make their own everything. They make their own gefilte fish. They make their own, and if they can't make it, they don't eat it. There are people like that. They'll not buy any finished product. They'll buy raw ingredients, and whatever they make, they make. Whatever they don't make, they don't make. And there are others who say, come on, if you trust their shechit on the chicken, I could trust them to say the mayonnaise goes to Pesach. And there's different levels, you know, of what is your thing. And then some people have this thing about peeling their vegetables. You know about that? Some people only eat if they peel it. And other people say, wash it off like anything else and it's fine, which it is not halacha, but some people are more careful. So whatever it is, that leads some families just to, we call it not to mishnah, just to, we won't eat out. They just won't eat anyone Pesach except for family because there are so many of these things going on. And I think most people aren't insulted. You know, if you call someone to invite them for a Pesach meal and they say, I'm sorry, we don't eat out, they're not going to say, what, you don't trust me? You know, they're not going to say that. They're going to understand that you have your things, they have their things, and okay, so we, well, no problem, we'll have you for the Shabbos after Pesach, right? They don't get offended like that. So really, that is what it should be the rest of the year too. The reason people get offended is because they look at it like, I'm as holy as you are, why you won't eat my house? But the fact is, there are different stringencies that people have. There are people only eat certain shechitas. Like they have in one stop, they'll tell you if it's chassidus shechita or it's not chassidus shechita. I don't know why some people only eat chassidus shechita. I think it's perfectly fine not. But some people only will eat chassidus shechita. Right? And it goes on and on and on like that. So, if we understand that kashrus has a lot to do with the kedusha of Klal Yisrael, or another way of putting it is, eating is a moral decision. There are moral issues with our eating. So then we should be more respectful of other people's chumras and not take offense by it. And of course, I'm not saying in any way that people with stringency should look down on people who don't have them. You have to be accepting of, not everyone has to take on chumras just because you have these chumras. So that's the flip side of it. But either way, it's not that people should take offense when you have certain things you're careful with when it comes to various food items. And that's what Rav Chaim is saying, that we have to consider vulnerability with kashrus issues the same way we consider it with poisonous things. And the more we picture that and the more we envision it, the more careful we're going to be with various stringencies and chumras and things like that. There's also one other element that I think is worthwhile to mention, and it has nothing to do with poison, and it has everything to do with self-control. So much of Yahadus surrounds self-control. And the ability to push off things that we want and would like to have. We don't fall into the pit of instant gratification that many people who are not Jewish suffer from. We live in a time when people want their pleasures and they want it now. And this leads to all kinds of terrible things like drug abuse and alcoholism, stuff like that. Instant gratification. You can't wait to have what you want. You want it, it's good, I want it now. But Yidden, we grow up from very young, that's not how it works. You want chocolate and candy and ice cream, that's great, but you're fleishiks. You have to wait. Tell little kids. You have to wait an hour, you have to wait 3 hours, you have to wait 6 hours. You take a child to the grocery store. I want the candies. Oh, they have all the candies lining up by their cash register. It's not kosher. Okay. Kid's quiet. They understand. I can't have it. They want it. Can't have it. Can't have everything you want. And the only things you can have, you can't have, always have it when you want it. And we are, Baruch Hashem, trained that way from very young. We're trained from very young. You don't always get the things that you would like to have, and the things that you like to have, some ways you can get. You can't get it now. You have to wait for it. And then as you get older, we understand that you have a fast day, and we understand that it's Shabbos or Yom Tov, and I have to wait till after to do certain things. And we are trained, and it's ingrained in keeping Torah mitzvahs, that you can't always have right now that which you need, and you're fine. And we'll be fine, or we will survive, and we'll be okay. And the world doesn't come to an end. To go on a vacation and walk into a store and know that you can't eat every food on the shelf isn't a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. You can't just go to any store and pick off the shelf and take something. There's a certain concept of self-control that keeping kosher provides. And again, this will vary on your levels of what you're careful. If you eat chalav stam, let's say, you can go on vacation and probably find a lot of kosher food anywhere you go. A lot of OUD stuff out there. And if you're careful chalav Yisrael, well, all that stuff is out the window. Now you're a narrower world. But there's still stuff out there. And if you're careful of pas Yisrael, forget it. Now you're really down. I'm not talking about yashin, out the window. Summertime's not a problem. But I'm saying, so there's this other thing going on with kashrus, besides the fact of what it does to your lev and nefesh, but from a midos standpoint. From a midos standpoint, being particular with kashrus, and even being more particular, it does teach and train you to control yourself, and it strengthens your willpower, it strengthens your general ability to be patient and to understand that I don't take everything that I want in life and I'll get what I need in its proper time, in its proper place, and so on. Of course, it could be a pain in the neck to pack up more stuff in your car because you bring all your food with you because you're not going to find it where you're going, whatever, like that. But again, this idea that we just can't go anywhere we want and find food, to me, like, that's the difference of a human and an animal, right? A bird goes where they go to find food, they'll eat. Animals will forage, they'll find what to eat. People are not like that. So the more careful of kashrus, period, means already you are limiting what you can access. And those people who are more careful is just more limiting. And I do think on a major life scheme of things, being able to control and understand that I don't need to receive instant gratification for my wants and desires is very significant. It's very important in Yahadus that it's like mind over, not matter, but mind over your guf, your seichel is in charge and not your body. And that's a very important thing in many areas of life. So again, it's a side point. Ramchal doesn't mention it. His main point here is just look at what it does to your neshama, the damage or the good, depending on if it's kosher or not. But there's this other element that I'm just throwing out, that being particular and careful also, in general, is very good for the person's development in being careful b'chlal, in understanding how to take from this world in measure and not to require instant pleasures and so on, that there's a thing of being patient and waiting and till you get the right thing in the right place at the right time. That's another important side effect, the fringe benefit, if you will. A fringe benefit of being particular and careful with kashrus and yonim.